or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You know, when I think about this show, a lot of it focuses on people who are in midlife or older, and I felt I've done short shrift to young people who, after all, are or should be in the process of choosing a career, choosing a college, choosing a major, or finding a good job. So how do I strike the balance between, on the one hand, addressing the needs of young people at a critical time when they're choosing careers, at the same time serving my wonderful older listeners? And so I thought we'd focus on how parents, grandparents, other relatives, anybody who cares about a young person might be of help to such a young person in choosing a college, choosing a major, choosing a career, getting off their butt and looking for a job if they've already finished their education. And who better to help me kick that around, what the best way to do that, how you guys can be more helpful, than the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, winner of many state and national awards, including one for me, the Best Wife Award, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're good. So let's start right away with the chronologically. The big issue that parents always face is because they're older, perhaps wiser, some kids or just aren't that motivated. Sure, if your kid is super motivated in high school and they're reviewing 20 colleges or 30 colleges and picking out the right ones and looking through lists of majors and whatever and writing great essays, there's no problem. But unfortunately, many kids who are teenagers are not taking the process that seriously, including even after they graduate college looking for a job. At what point does the parent decide to take the lead in the process? And how do you do it without kind of creating undue dependency? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I have many thoughts on that. One, certainly parents should be talking to their kids as the kids are in high school about what are they thinking about for their future. It's too easy to let kids just live in the immediate present and think about sports teams and whatever else they're doing for extracurriculars in high school with little thought to the fact that someday they're going to be expected to get a job. And these days, they tend to think mostly about, well, where am I going to go to college? But again, without that thought that what is between you in high school and your career is college. Are you thinking when you pick a college about what you want to be, what you want to major in, where is the best college for that? Or are you just thinking of, hey, my friend is going to UCLA, therefore I want to go to UCLA? So that's one thing that I think happens.
Before you go to the number two, let me try to respond to that. If I'm a kid, I say, look, in the end, it comes down to prestige. I want to go to Berkeley. I want to go to Stanford. I want to go to UCLA if I can't get into Berkeley or Stanford or Harvard or whatever. And I'll send out my applications. It's right now I'm worrying about my grades. I'm worrying about my life. I can't worry about that. All this fine-tuning stuff, to hell with it. What would you say back to that?
I would say that's playing an old tape. I think perhaps that used to be true. But these days, you can graduate from a prestigious school. If you don't have a skill that an employer considers important, you're not going to get the job, even with your fancy degree.
And a lot of course, many people will say that, you know, college should not be just about career at all. It should be about growing, learning, being away from home for the first time, academic learning. And so the kid says, look, I'm in high school now. I'm busy. I want to get good grades to get into college. And I also want, you know, you say, Mommy, Daddy, you always tell me to keep learning. So I'm working. I'm plenty busy working on all those stupid AP courses you're making me take. So leave me alone. Leave me alone. I'll do it when on my terms. Don't get away, Mom. The more you beg me, the more I'm more likely to resist. How do you respond?
I would say that while it's true that college clearly is not solely for the purpose of preparing you for your career, that's only one of its purposes, we also can't say that that's no part of what you're doing when you're choosing a college. It's very nice to keep learning. We all appreciate the fact that it's important to love learning and continue. And in fact, in any career these days, you will have to be a lifelong learner. We know that because things are changing so quickly. But at the same time, you can't just go to college to become schooled in the arts and theater and all the myriad things that you can get at a college to make you a well-rounded person and not have some career direction, because then you end up at the end of 4 years with a whole mountain of debt and no way to repay it.
Yeah. I want to turn to, we're going to try, I don't know if you're hearing, we're hearing some crackling, which I think is coming from the radio station, not your phone line, because we checked it, it looked like it was fine. But anyway, let me try this before we get to your, I know you said you had a number of points to make. I want to lay out what I would do if I were the parent or grandparent or the person who's primarily involved in helping my child, and my child wasn't the super motivated person. And I want you to be honest in saying what you agree with and disagree with about the plan. First of all, I would start with, believe it or not, career. If my kid's in high school, they'd often say, oh, he's too young to choose a career. Of course I know that. But very often, having a tentative goal of career makes the kid more motivated to want to do college and get into a more, perhaps more selective college. It also helps outline what might be a useful major, and that would help us choose a college that has the major. If, for example, what's critical, I believe, is often to choose a more under-the-radar major. So let's say entomology, the study of insects. He or she may never have thought about that in high school and applied to a college, and later on maybe have discovered that she loves insects, and then it's too late, she's got to transfer. So I would start by helping the child choose a major, helping the child then choose a potential career while fully acknowledging it could change, helping them choose an appropriate major just in case, because there's still plenty of room for electives, then finding colleges that are a good fit, not only in terms of major, but overall a fit in terms of geography and how selective. Be a good questioner to guide the student into writing a great essay that really reflects who they are without writing the essay for them. And then just staying not too involved, but modestly interested, being interested and modestly involved through the college process. And then after the kid graduates or throughout the college, encouraging them to get internships or whatever. And then after they graduate, if they're back on the sofa playing video games and watching soap operas, then without being too invasive, trying to be a loving taskmaster. That in a minute and a half or whatever is a summation of the sequence of events and how I would proceed. What do you like and not like about that as a role for a parent, grandparent, whoever, who's responsible for a child or an adult child?
Good question, because there was a lot of stuff in there.
I know.
I like the part about questioning your child. And I don't think we can question the kids about what career they want, because I don't think that any parent is going to have in their mind entomology. The problem with depending on parents and grandparents is they are very limited in what they know of all these new and burgeoning careers, so that they are not really in a great position to help their kids.
But they're a directory. That's the role. There are all kinds of, like, for example, ONET Online has hundreds of careers. There's a college board has something called the Book of Majors that has 600 careers. Of course, even a career counselor doesn't have it all in their head. You've got to use the wonderful resources out there. But the role for the parent is to help shepherd the child, the adult child, to exploring those. Does that make sense?
Yes. But I would really start with, what do you like? What is it in school that you like the most? Do you like dealing with numbers? Do you like dealing with reading a lot? Do you see yourself as being someone who's interested in the sciences? Is there some job in the medical field that you think might be interesting to you because you want to help people, you're interested in sickness? Start identifying interests, and from there, begin to narrow down a very large career field, and from there, go to one of these books and start trying to determine what jobs there are, and then how much school you need for those jobs, what you would be studying. So yes, if again, this is a really good thing if your kid is willing to listen to you as a parent, but as we all know, sadly, often teenagers think that their parents are morons and don't have an IQ of 20. So that may be a hard way to go. But yes, I would be there. I would offer. I would if possible, point out everywhere all these different careers that are going on, all the things that are available in technology that we didn't even dream of that are now available today. The other thing I would do as a parent is I would be at the school and talking to them, because all schools today talk about college and career readiness. And those are nice words, but most of what happens in schools is college readiness, not career readiness. So I would hold the schools accountable, and I would say, I'd like to know what it is that you're doing in career readiness. You know, in what way are you helping my child try to figure this out? Not to be too hubristic, but in Napa County, all of our middle schools and high schools are using an incredible system called Naviance, which is like a full college and career system that helps kids figure out just the things that you were talking about. And it also gives parents access to that. So kids and parents can talk about it, kids and counselors can talk about it, and it's got links to everything in the universe, all the books that narrow down what careers there are in this field for people with these skills. So I would be trying to encourage my child to do all of that before they're filling out those college applications and determining that they're going to go where their friend is going.
I agree that certainly using a really good computerized self-assessment or whatever, which exists on both Onet online, but as well if the school's got it, has paid the big bucks for a system, I think that's great, and I think it's great for parents to use it. Where I disagree with what you said at the very beginning of what you were saying, which was asking the kid, what do you like, science and math, most teenagers have had a fairly constrained existence. They know about the few subjects in school. They have had limited experience in the real world. Their activities after school may have consisted primarily of sports and pop culture, and there's so much more. And that's why I don't think that you can ask those questions, but you can usually get kind of arid answers that are based on too little. That's why I love to see the school and or especially the parent or anybody caring shepherd the kid, go online to one of these kind of assessments with a Naviance or whatever, and work with them, make it an exploration as though you're exploring, like you're shopping in a shopping mall, rather than all even the questions coming from the parent, though the software asks you so many questions about who you are and who you might be and exposes you to all kinds of options. I think that that's the primary role of parents in choosing the career early, of course, subject to change, and the major, and then in turn the college. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are all kinds of career websites. There's the California Career Zone. There are lots of things that are free that help a student narrow down things they like and how that relates to careers.
Well, something I'd like to relate to you, my dear listeners. There is only 1 hour during every 6 months that we come to you. As you can tell, Barbara and I care a lot about you and your children and trying to help you with your work life. It's an unfortunate reality that the way in which a radio station that doesn't have commercials weighs whether a show stays on the air and et cetera is how much you pledge during this time. This is the only time. So if you like work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, the workovers we do with calls, we can't take callers today because of technical reasons during the pledge drive, but this is the time. We make it easy for you because we give you, it takes only 1 minute, and we give you a gift. If for a pledge of $75, you get a signed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. And on October 19th, we invite you to come to brunch and get to meet Barbara, my wife, and I, and give us your input, share, network with each other. It's a small thing. Only a dozen people come, or sometimes even a few less than that. It's fun, and all you need, and that's $150 to come for brunch for one, or $250 for a couple. The phone number to do that, and this is the time, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-KALW-917. And we have a challenge, and so your dollars will go twice as far. We're trying to simply make a $300 challenge from Scott Anderson in San Francisco. So if you will pick up the phone and pledge up to $300, it'll be matched. And we have this goal that we're really trying to get, which is if we can get 5 new members. People, if you like work with Marty Nemco but you haven't joined, great. 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917. Or you can do it if you'd rather not talk to our really wonderful, easy-to-work-with volunteers. It takes you just a minute. You can go to KALW.org. We want to keep these brief. Barbara, is there anything you want to add?
If you're listening to the show, it's probably because you find it useful. And if you find it useful, maybe it helped you in determining how to do your job search, or perhaps you got some advice on how to craft the job to make it more fit your strengths, or even you got a raise because of learning some tips on how to ask for it. This would be a great time to say thank you.
It is the only time. That is the only time for the next 6 months. So if you would like to support Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, every dollar is a vote for workover, career workovers, trying to help people with their career and supporting KALW, of course. The phone number again, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-KALW. 91.7. And now, I love that on KALW, we try to keep these things where these pledge breaks or these donation breaks, whatever, brief, so that you can have the programming you want instead of these long pledge drives. So let's go right back to the programming. Barbara, so we talked just briefly about the prestige issue. You know, most kids, you know, we live in an era where we're so afraid of being unemployed that we're always going to opt, whether it be choosing a college or a workplace, we choose for the most prestigious one. Like I said, if you can get into Harvard, you go to Harvard. If you can't get it, or Harvard or Stanford. If you can't get into Harvard, Stanford, you say, okay, I'll do Berkeley. And then if you can't get Berkeley, UCLA. Do you believe, and I think there's two sides of this, do you believe that we are giving too much value to prestige brand names on a diploma?
Well, of course. I think we give too much prestige to names in general. I see people walking around in clothing that is labeled with the manufacturer, and I can't understand why they want to promote them.
Be a walking billboard.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of colleges, the problem with really targeting the most prestigious college is A, very expensive, and B, the more selective they are, the harder the competition is going to be once you get there. What seems to me to be far more important in the college experience is doing things. It's what you do when you get there. Are you the person who joins the school newspaper and works his way up to the editor? Are you the person who gets involved in different clubs and is active in things and makes connections and does internships? That's going to be what will create the best and most optimal chance for success in the real world. Just the fact that you spent your 4 years at Harvard, unless, of course, you want to be a college professor in philosophy, and there are probably two jobs a year in that, then having a Harvard degree would probably be more important. The other thing is you don't have to go to the fanciest undergraduate school. If you're planning to do something that requires a graduate education, you would probably get better grades at a less prestigious school and have a greater chance of getting into a good law school or medical school if you're really a bright, motivated student. And that's what's going to determine the graduate degree and where that's from rather than the undergraduate degree.
There is a really strong counterargument that can be made, and I'm going to make it. Number one, there are many, indeed, students who do best when they are pushed to the maximum. There are some students do best as the big fish in the less selective pond, somebody who would be the best student at Cal State East Bay rather than the worst student at Berkeley. But there are some kids, and that's why it's a very individualized decision, who do better only when pushed. Second, employers really are, especially in fields like law or medicine or medical school or whatever, yes, GPA matters, but they really do use the prestige of the degree of the school to screen, and it's not irrational, because people, to get into Harvard or Stanford or Berkeley, you have to be a very high achiever, therefore driven or brilliant. You usually have to be, quote, well-rounded, or at least have an expertise in something special. It is, and then to graduate from such a school, is not trivial. And there is the benefit if you've spent 4 years around the nation's, quote, best and brightest at Stanford or Harvard. It rubs off. And so there's damn good reasons why employers would prefer somebody from a prestigious school. And the reality is, you do. If my son or daughter could go to a Harvard or Stanford, I want my child to grow even though I'm well aware that many of the professors are more theoretical and not that interested in teaching. They may not be. Maybe the teaching quality is better at a community college, arguably on average, but there is so much that's benefited. The kids benefit from spending 4 years with each other. While there is a lot of pressure and some kids fold from it, I think at least in fairness, we need to say that they're, depending on the kid, it could well be worth the money. And finally, it is the Harvards and Stanfords that have very rich endowments, and so they tend to be very generous with financial aid to those who are not wealthy. And as far as graduate school, generally people are, believe it or not, employers and peers are more impressed by where you went undergraduate than graduate school. So that's my analysis there. Anyone want to push back on that or agree or whatever?
Well, I'll have to defer to you if you tell me employers are more interested in where you got your undergraduate degree. But I'm thinking if I'm a law firm, I'm going to be most concerned with where you got your law degree than whether you got your undergraduate degree at Harvard. And in fact, these days, there is a lot of preference given to people who've overcome obstacles. So if you say, I went to Napa Junior College because I couldn't afford to go to an expensive school because my parents were not making a lot of money, but I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer, the people reading those admissions essays, I think, tend to be somewhat biased in terms of giving people a leg up that they might not otherwise have had. Now, I certainly agree with you that you will meet a lot of important connections if you go to a prestigious undergraduate school. And as you said, and rightly so, this is a very individual decision. I would probably be the kind of person that would fold under the pressure of being with all these brilliant students and feeling that I couldn't measure up, where when I'm in the class and I'm one of the top students, I work harder. So it depends on who your kid is and how they're likely to react. And you do have to look at who's going to get the scholarships and who's going to end up having to pay back the biggest mountain of debt.
Just a little more about this. All things being equal, I am well aware that some kids really are better off in the less selective pond. But all things being equal, unless my kid was very insecure, there have been many studies that show that the greatest influence on a teen or a young adult's behavior and attitudes is their peers, not their parents, not their teachers. And so living in the same dorm and interacting with Harvard or Stanford or Berkeley caliber students for those 4 years is very, very powerful. Also, they have connections. You know, people who tend to be that capable tend to have capable parents, and capable parents tend to have job connection possibilities. So if I befriend some people while I'm at Berkeley, and then, you know, they introduce me to their parents, or we spend Thanksgiving together or whatever, or I simply say, hey, I'm looking for a job as an entomologist. Might you know somebody? People, maybe not in an arcane field like that, but let's say I'm really interested in being a nonprofit executive or something, and I want a launchpad job for that, I'm more likely to get leads on that from students at Berkeley, Stanford, or Harvard than I would at Cal State East Bay. Finally, though, a counter argument is the stress at the Berkeleys and the Stanfords and the Harvards tend to be quite oppressive. So if you are somebody who can get overwhelmed with stress and can't handle being not coddled, because you don't get coddled at those big and selective schools, then maybe you want to think a notch down. Any reaction to that?
Well, let's also remember that it's not a choice for most students.
Mm-hmm.
For most students, the possibility of getting into Harvard is not very high.
Right.
So we're talking about a select group
Very
of
true.
Students who might even be able to have this debate internally or with their families.
Great. Let's turn then, that's a great, absolutely excellent point. And so let us turn now to the community colleges, which is the point of entry for so many students. And I believe the most underrated, and I really think parents are very remiss in not encouraging their kids. Even if my son or daughter, if my kid was going to get into Harvard or Stanford or Berkeley, I probably would not say no. But if my kid was going to end up at Cal State East Bay or at a certainly at an expensive second or third tier private college, let's say a U.S. University of San Francisco or a St. Mary's or whatever, before I spent what really is about $250,000 for 4 years, assuming they graduate in 4 years, which is not right, I would really not think that that was, so St. Mary's was so prestigious as to justify that cost. I would really take a hard look at community colleges. They're essentially free. They have very often some of the best teaching on average because faculty is promoted exclusively based on how well they teach, not exclusively, well, heavily, rather than there's no research expectation. And I would encourage, and there's such vaunted dorm life, being away from home and living with others. Very often when you take kids away from home for the first time, put them three to a room with very little supervision, it really is a hothouse for a lot of all that binge drinking and binge drug abuse that we hear about. So I think that maybe one of the most important things that a parent or anyone who cared about a young person in the process of choosing a college should do would be to be at least neutral to or encouraging of community colleges. Your reaction?
Totally agree. You know, I'm a great fan of community colleges. I think they do a fabulous job. They give so many kids who might not otherwise have had a chance to go to a four-year college the opportunity to grow up a little bit. You may have fooled around in high school, and now you can't get into a great school, but you can get into a community college, and if you do well in your 2 years there, then you have a great chance of being accepted to one of the more prestigious colleges. And as you say, you don't have to deal with the, I'm on my own, nobody sees what I'm doing, my parents aren't here, I can go out and get drunk every night, not do anything except cut classes and have fun.
Now, what would you, here is where the rubber meets the road, where the, I hate that metaphor, actually, it's still cliche, but here's where the problem comes in. I know you don't like role-playing, but I'm going to ask you to do it here. Make believe I'm a high school kid, and I've worked reasonably hard. I'm not a Harvard-caliber student, but let's say I worked hard so I could get into UC Davis, and I'm pretty smart, so I'm getting UC Davis or maybe UC Santa Barbara or whatever, and you're now encouraging me to go to community college. And I say to you, Mommy, I'd be so embarrassed. I've worked so hard for what? So that I can go to a community college? Any idiot can get into a community college. I don't want to go to a community college. And how could I tell my friends? My friends are all going to say, I'm going to UC Davis. I'm going to San Francisco State. And I got to tell them, I'm going to Laney College, the community college. How would you respond if you were the parent?
I would say that's true, and your friends are going to owe over $100,000 when they finish school, and you will not. And that money can be used to getting into a good graduate school where you will have the best chance of being prepared for your future career. So I would not say you must go to community college, and there are good arguments to be made for going right to a four-year college. Again, depending on the kid, these things are so individual, and every parent knows their child best, so there are lots of factors that you have to take into account when you're making this decision.
Yeah. It seems to me that a kid in general, though, is so eager to get away from home. How do you deal with a kid who's saying, you know, nothing wrong with the community college, I guess, but I want to get away. And besides, they always tell me, you know, the counselors are constantly telling me, there's financial aid. Don't let money stand in the way. There'll be loans, and there'll also be some grant. And that, you know, why should I have to go to a community college? What would you say?
Well, again, I would say nobody said you have to. We're just pointing out, we're making a list of the pros and cons of making this decision. So, yes, there will be loans. Loans, by definition, have to be paid back at some point. I absolutely understand the lure of wanting to live in a dorm and be with young people the whole time. And honestly, that's something that I missed in my life. I went to Queens College, to the University of New York. I took the bus. I lived at home. And I always felt there was some lack in my life for not having had the opportunity to be in the dorm. And I do think that there is the opportunity to make lifelong friends. I think when you live in a dorm and you're really, you become close to people just because of the proximity of the whole thing, that you do have lifelong friends, and I am a little sorry that I missed out on that. So I would never say, I think this is the way to go, you must do this, and we're saying that you have to go to community college. I would merely say, let's explore the options. Let's talk to some people who went to community college. Let's talk to some people who went to a four-year college and lived in the dorm, and let's get a sense of how it affected their lives. That's the best thing that a parent can do, is try to get their kid to start opening his or her eyes to the adults around them that they know, and asking questions. We tend not to do that. You can know people for 15 years and you never ask them any questions about where did you go to school and how did you find your first job and how did you get to the job that you're in now. We need to be doing a whole lot more of that.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. We're trying to offer some guidance for parents, grandparents, and other relatives who are trying to help young people, whether they're teenagers in high school, in college, or after college, trying to look for a job, in how to go about making decisions more wisely without being overly prescriptive. And now I need to, and this is the only time in 6 months when I have to do this, although we do not get paid, Barbara and me, to be on the radio, it does cost a lot of money to run a radio station. And because we love, and I'm sure you love, that it's not commercial, there's no commercials, we need to come to you to pay for what is your fair share. If you are poor, we ask for nothing. We ask you just to listen, and we're grateful for your listenership. But if you feel you can't afford to pay your fair share, we would love you to do that. We make it easy for you to do that. For $75, you become a member or renew your membership at KELW and get a free autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. And for $150 for one person and $250 for two, on October 19th, you get to come sit in on the show and then have brunch with us. And get to know us. We get to know you. Give us your input. We'll do 3-minute makeovers. We have a great time. It's amazing networking. All you need to do is pick up the phone. It takes just a minute. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-KALW-917. And we have got a challenge from Scott Anderson in San Francisco. Your pledges up to $300 is going to be matched, so you get twice as many votes for Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. If you want to keep it on the air, this is the time to do it. We are trying to get 5 new members this time. We love your repeated members. If you've been a repeated person who's been a member for a long time at KALW, we love you. But particularly, we're trying to get 5 new members in this hour. 1-800-525-9917. If you like Work with Marty Nemko, the workovers I do, and you like, especially if you like Barbara Nemko, 1-800-525-9917. Or if you want to go online, you can do that as well, KALW.org. Barbara, anything quick you want to add, or should we go back?
Yes. Please don't underestimate how important it is that we raise a lot of money during this pledge drive. That's how it's determined what shows stay on the air. So if you're still listening to it, then you obviously like it a little bit, or you would have turned it off. So if you're listening to it and you like it, please help. Call $50, $100, $250 to come with your significant other to brunch. Whatever you can do is truly critical in helping this show stay on the air.
To be honest, I think if it were me, if I only liked Work with Marty Nemko a little and I liked other shows on KALW more, I'd probably donate during those hours. But if you like Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko more than a little, this is the time. And so I would invite you to make that call now, because this is the only chance. This is it, period. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-KALW-917. Come to brunch. It's really fun. You'll enjoy it. October 19th. Sit on the show. It's fun, and then the brunch is fun, and all the rest of it's fun. Okay.
And just one more thing.
Okay.
We've had people come to brunch multiple times.
Yes.
So that says it's fun.
They've enjoyed
because
it.
Because if they're willing to donate that amount of money more than once, and we've had them come 3 times, it really is a good time.
Totally fun for people who are fellow lovers of KELW and Work with Marty Nemko to get together. There's real good chemistry among us. It's very fun. Okay, now, so, when you always hear people helping children or whatever, or counselors helping people choose a college, they talk about, you know, well, I, you know, the kid will say, or the parent will say, you know, we want you to be in a big city or near a nice college town. I would argue that that has a lot less impact on students' happiness and success than we might otherwise think. Most kids end up spending the vast majority of their time on campus, and most campuses, or even a community college, are a wealth of activities. Clubs, sports teams, radio stations, speakers, events, concerts, and, you know, even around a community college, there are places to hang out, whether it be a bar or a bookstore or cafes. So I think that we absolutely overestimate the importance of the location of the school, except that if it's a good weather location, because that affects you every day. People here in California, when they go back east, they're shocked at how they freeze their butts off for 4 or 5 months. They've got to bundle up in 5 layers before they leave the house. There is much less sports option, hiking or whatever. And so I think the really important thing, the two factors most important in choosing a college that I would encourage parents or grandparents or counselors to consider are, number one, the weather, believe it or not, and maybe even more important probably, is the selectivity, which is what we covered earlier, which is, given your child, what is the appropriate level of rigor? If my child would really thrive best in the most difficult to get into college he or she could, I would encourage applying mainly to those. Certainly a safe school, but mainly to those. If your kid would thrive best as the big fish in the less selective pond, then I would certainly apply to one or two schools that we know that the kid could get into. And, you know, let's say my kid could easily get into UC Davis, I don't need to apply to a lot of schools because I know my kid's going to get in anyway, and therefore it makes the whole process easier. Any comments about that?
My one comment would be, I wonder if anybody's ever done a study to see if more of the drunken binge kind of activity happens at colleges that are not near cities that have a lot to offer.
Good point. I've heard it's true. I heard that at Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, it's very selective. It gets really super smart kids, but because there's nothing to do, that people do a lot of binge drinking and drug abuse. Good point.
So, yeah, I think if your kid might be someone who would be influenced by that or could possibly get involved in that, I would consider a school that had the attractions of a city nearby and lots of things to do besides just get drunk.
Point taken.
Other than that, I totally agree with you about the weather. It is depressing if you've lived in the sunshine all your life and suddenly you're back east and it's miserable for so much of the year, including in the summer when it's beastly hot and humid. Mm-hmm. So weather does affect your quality of life and whether you wake up feeling cheerful and ready for the day or beaten down because the heat's killing you or the cold is making you crazy.
Yeah, of course, kids are off from college in the summer, so that becomes less critical. Let's turn to one of my very favorite things, which is deferral. Many kids really have had enough of school after they finish their 12th grades. They have busted their butt to do the English and the math and the science and social studies and the foreign language, very often in honors classes or even the pressure, which I think is undue, to do advanced placement courses, and they've just had enough. There is a reason that literally 20% of all kids who start as a freshman don't come back for the sophomore year, and that even if given 6 years, 45% of all freshmen at so-called four-year colleges don't graduate. I want to repeat that. Even if given 6 years, 45% of all students who start at so-called four-year colleges don't graduate. And I think an antidote to some of that is what I call a gap year or deferral. You need not only a break from all the academics, but you need to find a reason to go to college other than that everybody's doing it or I know I'm going to need to do it for a job. If you explore some things during a year in between high school and college, you're much more likely to find something that you're excited enough about to make you more motivated when you go to college, or, as is not often enough considered, maybe you shouldn't go back to college, at least for now. You might defer for 5 or 10 years. We hear countless stories of people who are entrepreneurial or bright or self-learners or simply just don't give a crap about academics anymore, who save the parents the money and they go. And even if they have to start as a barista, they may be wiser to not go back at all for the next 2, 3, 5 years. But certainly the 1 year deferral to explore a variety of potential career and life options may be a very wise thing. Unfortunately, and it seems so unfair to students, would you believe no University of California campus and no California State University of campus allows it? Most private colleges, including the prestigious ones like Harvard, Stanford, MIT, they encourage, actually, students, after they're admitted, to say, great, thank you for admitting me to Stanford, but I'm going to take a year to do blah, blah, and blah, and they will always be allowed to defer. What's your thoughts, Barbara Nemco, about deferring?
I almost wish it was a requirement.
Oh, good point.
I think so many kids have no idea of what real life is all about, particularly among the more affluent ones who don't see the struggles. If your parents are people who are employed in good jobs and they like what they do, then it's all come easy to you. And you really don't understand what goes into going to work every day and what you have to do in order to keep the boss happy. A lot of kids don't even have the sense of responsibility to know that you have to set an alarm clock and make sure that you get yourself to where you need to be on time.
That's not.
And when you do,
I'm sorry, please finish. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When you do a gap year, I think it exposes you to the real world. I think interacting with adults is a wonderful thing. Whether you're doing a paid or unpaid internship or even job shadowing, you get to see what work really is like, not what you saw on television because you were watching some TV program about lawyers or doctors, but the real world of work. And I think it way better prepares you to figure out what you want to do when you're in college or if you want to go to graduate school after, and just gets you set up for life.
I am not convinced that just getting a job and learning to get up. Most kids know that they need to get up and get to work or whatever, like they have to get up to school. But what I think is important is the word exploration. I want to lay out for you, Barbara Nemco, if I were graduating high school, what I would want to do in that year. And get your reactions, and hopefully that, you know, the result will be that the parents and grandparents listening to this show who are trying to, shepherd their kids might craft an individualized approach tailored to their kid. But frankly, what I probably would do if I were graduating high school and could easily use that gap year in between, I'd probably do the following. I probably would do some traveling, but I would travel with a purpose. I have always cared a great deal about music. It's just something I love. So my way would be I would travel the country in a car, some crappy car that I, you know, if I had no money, I would, you know, whatever it was, some beater old car, and I would make a point of going to every concert hall I could in the country, maybe over a six, you know, over a 3 month period. I'd go to, you know, every major city, small ones, big ones. And I'd keep a blog. I would write about what I learned. I would keep a recorder, and subject to any licensing rules, I would record. Maybe I could sit on a rehearsal, because rehearsals, they would be allowing me to record. Maybe during the performance, they wouldn't. And I would have this blog with MP3s attached, and I would use that. Maybe I would end up deciding, hey, you know, maybe what would be cool would be to be a orchestra librarian. Nobody ever thought about that, but there are people who are the librarian in charge of an orchestra. Maybe I'd be in orchestra marketing. Maybe I would be in sound design. Maybe I would be a musician. Maybe I'd want to be a conductor. And I would talk to people. I would ask them and, you know, about their experiences, and I would chronicle all that in the blog. I would fill my year with maybe 3 or 4 of those focused experiences, and then the punchline is I would bet anything that if I then apply to college with those experiences that I can then document in my essays or whatever, I am likely to get into a far more selective college if I would do better in a selective college than I otherwise would have. What's your reaction?
You're a pretty self-motivated guy. And so I think that would be a fabulous thing for you to do. But I don't know that the majority of young people just graduating from high school would be able to do that or mature enough to do that, to just go traveling around by themselves and doing those kinds of things. I do think that looking and seeing what's going on in the real world is good. I would be more likely to want to encourage my child to go somewhere else, live somewhere else, but to work either as a volunteer or in a paid position, doing something to help other people in other communities. There is no shortage of need in this country for hardworking volunteers to do things. And if a child comes from a middle-class family and maybe hasn't seen what the real world is like, I think taking a good look at what's going on for other people would be a really good way to spend a year and to get some work experience at the same time.
I think your point is very well taken. That's fortunately, there are all kinds of structured programs that allow gap year students to do homestays in other countries, to do volunteer work, to join archaeological digs, to work in orphanages, to do, apprentice with master guitar makers in Italy. And so I would encourage any parent, grandparent, or whatever who's interested in helping their college-bound child to craft a gap year that is consistent with who they are, to simple Googling gap year activities or college deferral activities. And they're also consultants. If you can't do it yourself, there are people who, for $1,000 or $2,000, if you can afford it, will actually have this enormous database of all these activities that exist. But I do think now a lot of that's published. And so you could really, just using the internet, identify some really great activities. So, if your kid is really an outdoorsy person at their core, there may be something where you can join the Civilian Conservation Corps. I'm picking something out of my head. I don't even know if it exists anymore.
We're part of a work team. Sorry. And I just have to interrupt for 1 minute.
Yeah.
We had someone from the CCC come and talk to our board about 2 months ago, and it led to an entire life, a whole career, where she was able to move up and do all kinds of things because she did it. She started as a volunteer. So, yes, the Civilian Conservation Corps is alive and well.
Good. I have to interrupt the discussion. It's really kind of cool. I just got a note that said that somebody who's been to the brunch before, the KELW brunch where you get to meet Barbara and me, is coming back again. That's really what happens all the time. Let's take a 1 minute. Let's do a quick 1 minute break. Come to brunch with Barbara and me on October 19th, right here at KELW. First, you come at 11 o'clock, watch the show. Then you have a lovely brunch with us with a dozen or less people. It's fun. It's great networking. And you support Work with Marty Nemco. This is the only time for the next 6 months. If you want to vote for Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, every dollar is a vote for us. $150 gets 150 votes for Work with Marty Nemco and gets you to come to brunch. $250 gets you a couple coming to brunch on October 19th and seeing the show. And it's a challenge. So Scott Anderson in San Francisco is up to $300. We'll match your challenge. And we're really looking for 5 new members. We love you, repeat people who keep pledging. We love you to death. But if you're new, we'd love it too. The phone number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917, or go to KALW.org. Come to brunch with us. Be a part of KALW. Pay your fair share. Barbara, you want to add something quick before we go back to our show?
When you come to brunch, you might even find yourself saying a few words on the radio. It is fun.
Right, we've done that.
We always have a good time. It's a little different every time.
Right.
But it's fun, and you know that you are letting the KALW organization know that you value Work with Marty Nemco.
And Barbara Nemco. Okay. So now, let's get to where I really want to focus in this last segment, which is the most important thing of all, is the issue of motivation. This is all... Everything we've talked about how to help your child or grandchild choosing a college, choosing a major, land a job, whatever, is implies that the kid is not so super self-motivated, they're going to do it themselves. So, seriously, Barb, if you had a son or a daughter who is like pulling teeth, they weren't interested in exploring the career stuff, they weren't doing a great job on their college applications, they're procrastinating, in college they were kind of just getting by, and then after college they're kind of lackluster, they're taking a job that's kind of a crapola job instead of a launch pad to a career, what are some of the thoughts that go through your head about how Barbara Nemco would try to help motivate that child?
Well,
the words tough love come to mind, particularly with the kid who has been to college, has a degree, doesn't have a decent job. That would be a fine time to say, you know, you've been living at home now for X amount of time, and the gravy train is over. So this is your warning. In 3 months, you need to be self-supporting and out of here.
And for some kids, that will work, and for many others, it won't. So what happens after 3 months? I'm still in my... Are you going to put me on the street? Going to take my... and call the sheriff and have him move my crap out on the street?
Probably not, but I'm not going to give you a dime, and I'm not going to do your laundry, and I'm not going to prepare your meals. No, I won't throw you out on the street, but I'm going to eliminate you as a member of the household that gets services for which they don't contribute.
Let me try to play shrink with this. Sometimes I agree tough love is the answer, and you can, psychologists and counselor types can be too excuse-making for the kid. But let me, for balance, take the other side. I'm pretending you're the kid, and I say, I know you don't want to live off us your whole life. That can't feel good. You don't want to be a parasite. And yet you're not going after it. Are you scared? Do you not know how to do it? What's really underneath it, my loving child? I love you very much, and I know that there's something going on underneath, and how can I be of support to you as we try to take baby steps to move you to being the self-sufficient person you want to be? I know you want to get your own place. I know you'd like to go out and have a romantic partner, and you're embarrassed to ask people out on a date because you don't want to say you're unemployed. My dear son or daughter, how can I be of support? What do you think of that approach?
I think that's lovely. I wish you were my father.
Okay. So anything else that you... We're now coming toward the end of the show. Let's think back, Barb, on everything that the really wise, and I love that word, wise parent or grandparent could do to be of support to their child, grandchild, with regard to college, career. Any thoughts? Like, especially around career, because we haven't really talked very much about parents supporting kids regarding career.
Start early and often. Point out to your child the different jobs that people are doing. Talk to people when you go into stores and businesses about, how did you get this job? What attracted you to it? Where did you go to school? How did you train? I go to the dentist. I say to the hygienist, tell me about how you got into this work and how do you like it? So with your child there, ask a lot of questions when they're small. Start this when they're in elementary school. Ask your school district, what are you doing to help my child prepare for careers? Ask them, do you have a system? Do the students meet with guidance counselors? What are the things that I can do, guidance counselor? What can I do at home to reinforce and support what you're doing? What are the websites that I can try and get my child to pay attention to?
Barb, honestly, as an education administrator, you know, we've heard of parents trying again to just even get small things from the school, the school district. In your heart of hearts, do you believe really a parent calling the school district and saying, what are you doing for career? You really think that's going to make a difference? Isn't it just going to make you seen as a pushy, alienating parent?
Well, it depends. If I call and say, what are you doing to do this? Yeah, that might make me be seen as pushy and alienated. But I think if you just sit down with the guidance counselor and you say, I'm really curious, I'd love to know what sorts of things the school is doing so that I can support them at home. And is there anything else that you would suggest that I can do to help my child? I don't think that would be seen as pushy and overbearing. I think that would be seen as supportive.
Okay. The thing that I think we haven't covered yet that I would like to add is this. I really wish that young people were self-starters, but I look back even on myself, who considers himself a self-starter. I actually, if I didn't have a certain amount of luck or I wasn't particularly efficacious, I really would need mommy or daddy or somebody to help open a career door for me. It's not wrong for a parent in that what I call launch pad job. Let's say the kid is finished with school and is just not doing, you know, he or she may have tried to land a job and is not getting anywhere. I really think that it's not inappropriate for a parent or grandparent to set up leads, to set up informational interviews, to look through all the list of people you know as a parent or a grandparent and say, make a list of everybody whom your child, your adult child, should talk with to get some career advice and maybe open a career door. And give that list to the kid. I probably wouldn't want to make the call on behalf of the kid. That feels a little too disempowering. But I really think that I would give the kid the list, and importantly, I would role play with my child. They don't teach you in school how to make such a call. And so, though you'll remember in the world of education, there was this woman named Madeline Hunter who had a model of teaching, which says when you're trying to teach a new concept, you first model it, then you have the kid practice it, you give feedback, and so on. So what I would do is I would sit down with my, give my child this list, and before having him or her make the calls to my personal network of people who might be able to give him a job lead, I'd say, let me model that for you. Let's practice together. And I would model, for example, I'd say, oh, hi, Joe. My name is Marty Nemko, and I just graduated college, and my mom suggested that you're a great guy and that I should give you a call. Perhaps you might have some career advice for me. I'm a science major. I majored in biology, but I'm not sure what in the world I really want to do. I'm wondering if you might sit down and chat with me and tell me a little bit about what you do. Now, that was a little long-winded. That was a little too long. I might have been broken up. But modeling that and then having the kid practice, my giving gentle feedback, that would be the way in which I think as a parent or other, a grandparent, anybody who is supportive of my child launching a career, that's what they should do. What's your reaction?
I think that's great. We're talking about different places along the spectrum.
Right, right.
You just talked about the student who graduated from college and is actually looking to network to getting a job.
Right.
I was talking more about the child growing up.
Yeah. In high school. I wasn't disagreeing. I was focusing on what we hadn't earlier talked about, which was the career piece. Right.
Absolutely. I think that is the way to go if the student doesn't have any leads.
Okay. Now, we only do it. There's 3 minutes left, not only in the show, but until it's your last chance to support Work with Marty Nemko. And I know you've got a lot of other priorities, and the last thing you want to hear is a pitch for money. But I like to think that if you do care to keep Work with Marty Nemko on the air, and you do like public radio, I love the non-commercial aspect. I used to be on commercial radio, and it seemed like there was 4 minutes of commercials for every 6 minutes of show. It was really annoying. Not to mention, there's a subtle effect of all those commercials on the nature of the programming. If you like non-commercial programming, if you like Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, if you want to vote for the show, this is literally the last 2 minutes when you can do it. We make it really easy to make the decision to call because we invite you to come to brunch with us. It's so fun. October 19th, you're sitting on the show with Barbara and me, and then we have this lovely brunch and we get to know each other. And hopefully I can do makeovers on people come in the firm. Sometimes they want me to do makeovers on them. It is totally fun. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. $150 for one person, $250 for two. Or if that's a little steep for you, $75 will get you an autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. What do you got to say, Barb? Oh, I got to tell about the challenge. We're trying to get 5 new members. And in this last minute, I think we've got, one or two more we need. If you're somebody who is not pledged yet to KLW, we'd love to hear from you. And Scott Anderson in San Francisco, great guy, he's issued a challenge. So your donation up to $300 will be matched. So 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917, or go to KALW.org. Barbara, what do you got to say?
If this is going to be a vote for Work with Marty Nemko, you got to do it now, because if you do it later, it'll count for some other show.
Right.
So please take this opportunity. It is absolutely critical. If you were listening to the show because you needed some career advice, wanted to get some career tips, or you've gotten a career makeover or learned something in the past that helped you with your job, this is the time to say thank you. Call, pledge. That's what keeps the show on the air. It really does.
1-800-525-9917. I always like to end these, though, with a nod to people who can't afford to pledge. I honor you whether you have no money and you're homeless or you're wealthy. We've had people donate thousands of dollars, individuals, thousands, and we have people who just don't choose to or can't afford to. I honor all of you. It is a privilege. I now am ending 25 years on this show. And I love it, and I hope to do it for another 25, you know, given I'm grateful for my health and hope to keep doing it. But I thank you so much, all of you, for listening, whether or not you call 1-800-525-9917. And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, longtime board operator, Joanne Marr, and all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers. I love doing that for you. And where are the careers in biotech and biomedicine? Today and tomorrow, I'm going to talk with a real expert. His name is Gregory Thale. He is the biomedical advisor for the nonprofit Tech Futures Group. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.